Welcome in, time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in, time for Daily Editorial. Jimmy is on the road, heading back to the Pacific Northwest, but we're going to still do Daily Editorials every day as he's getting pretty good reception where he by the route that he is taking. Jimmy, I want to talk a little about the Treaty of Minsk, 2014-2015. Tommy asked about potential implications there. I think you could take all the treaties in the world personally that have been done in the past and throw them out the window. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, rewarding Russia for occupying Crimea and using Belarus, the president there, Lukashenko, who is a, you know, authoritarian leader that's basically taken control for, you know, quite a long time now. There's not a lot of value in that. The one thing that I think is really important is that relationship between Belarus and Russia.
Right.
They are two authoritarian rulers. They're going to side together because they're, like, dependent on one another. I will say that, very interestingly, the opposition leader in the 2020 election in Belarus was a woman, and she came out yesterday, I believe, and said, hey, this allowing Russia to invade Ukraine is a breach of international law and Belarusian policies, which in fact nullifies Lukashenko's leadership. So she says she's in charge. Now, that's not going to happen because, you know, he's got control of the
right,
all the security apparatus, and right now he's got Putin's support. But yeah, basically the treaty, these policies that are rewarding and negotiating between, you know, tyrants, not very valuable anymore.
Well, what I'm finding to be very interesting is the Russians aren't exactly, they're not just rolling in and rolling out. They are having significant problems in Ukraine, specifically significant problems in Kiev. The thousands of Russian troops involved right now in Ukraine and specifically in Kiev really aren't getting very, very far. As we're recording this at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time here on the West Coast, the Russians with their ground troops are not having a lot of luck, and I don't know. I don't know what that's going to lead to. I don't know if that's going to change Putin's philosophy or not. I should say plans or not. What do you think?
Well, I think, again, he overestimated the capability of his military, primarily because no one's going to question him. He's the great leader. So generals aren't going to say, no, we can't do that. But they used a large number of conscript forces, basically draftees, forced them to sign contracts, and then sent them in there. They don't know why they're even there, many of them that are being captured. There's, according to some today's reporting from some of the NGOs in the area, they're reporting over 3,000 Russian troop casualties. There's massive destruction. The Chechen murder battalion, apparently, according to reports, had 53 tank column that was destroyed by Ukrainian aircraft.
Yeah.
And now the EU has offered Ukrainian Ukraine Air Force sophisticated fighter aircraft. This is going to make it incredibly difficult to sustain any operations. And the fact that the entire country is mobilized, I don't think the Russians can last very much longer. I think they're going to have some very serious problems, but I expect it. And I mentioned it earlier. This is not, you know, this is not a video game. It is really difficult to sustain combat operations over a long period of time. Watching the U.S. do it is not, no other country has that capacity or the capability to do it. And we have a very professional force. They have been trying to build up from their mistakes in 2008 in Ossetia and their move to Tbilisi. They ran out of logistics. They actually pre-supplied through the Crimea issue, and there was really no force there to stop them. So this is a completely different situation. And, oh, by the way, the United States has been training and operating with Ukraine and their military for now 30 years. And they have fought with us in Afghanistan and Iraq. A lot of troops have rotated in there. And these ones, even ones that have retired and have left the service, they're all very capable and understand combat and joint operations. Very different than the Russian military.
You know, it's kind of interesting that the guy that's becoming kind of a worldwide hero here is very definitely Zelensky. And America offered to evacuate him, and he said, "No, I need ammunition, not a ride." So that's kind of interesting. I would have to say that the world opinion of Zelensky is changing. He's looking to be a real hero here as of this moment in time. And again, this is a very volatile situation. It's hard, in my opinion, to say how it's going to break out. I was under the impression personally, Jimmy, that Russia would just kind of run in there and bulldoze the country, but that's not happening at all, not even close. And because of that, I think Putin really, really, given the fact that the whole world at this point in time is totally against him, I don't know where that show of force from the rest of the world, I don't know how that's going to influence China. It's hard to say, but I would guess that China probably, because of its own best interest, is not just with Russia, it's with the entire world. And I would guess that China probably at this point in time would support the world, and the world opinion right now is Zelensky's a hero.
Well, I think that the Chinese they look at in terms of 1,000 years, not in
right.
1 year.
Right.
So we're going to look at this and say, okay, yeah, they kind of helped stimulate this, as well as some really bad decision making in Washington and the U.S. orders. Really bad policy from the Biden administration facilitated this effort. It should have never happened. But the Chinese, I think, are going to look at this and say, okay, we've got to really look hard at operational capabilities, because they've been signaling very strongly that they're going to move on in Taiwan. They have been telling the world for a year now that, you know, since Biden's been in power, that they're going to do something.
Yeah.
Now, if the Russians can't quite do it, they're going to maybe adjust their policies or their strategy, maybe hold off for a little bit. But if they're going to act, they're going to have to act on Taiwan before the 2024 election, because the likelihood of a continuation of weakness in the region.
Well, what I think is interesting is the United States, as of today, has taken a very definite stance. And, of course, Biden has to do that because his legacy as the president of the United States is very definitely on the line here. And what have we given them in terms of military aid just in the last couple of days? We've given them $350 million.
Yeah, so this is the work that I did. Did the training and equipping with these countries in former Soviet Union, in the region, Albania, and of course, Republic of Georgia. So there's different operations in the State Department, the Security Assistance Program. They have emergency authorizations. They go through. They could drop that money out without congressional approval. So they're going to give them lethal weaponry. They did start that under Trump. Trump actually did that. The Obama administration did not. The Obama-Biden administration did not want to give them lethal aid.
Right.
The continuation of the Trump policies there, providing them with and some sophisticated radar and probably some of the UAV technology that they're using to hit some of the convoys. Again, I'm very experienced with that in Afghanistan. It's not a lot. It's very expensive to do this. The hard part, you know, to fight a war like this, the hard part is getting the logistics support to get that equipment to them in time. And right now they need beans and bullets. They need medical supplies. There's
right.
a lot of things that they're going to need to survive here. It's a very complex thing to get those logistics in there. And the United States is going to have to take some actions if they want to get that into them, as well as the EU. And the only reason why the EU and the U.S. are saying, okay, we're going to do this, is because Zelensky is actually putting a very good faith.
You know, the Wall Street Journal came out with an interesting editorial, and they said that if Putin doesn't go ahead and finish this, for lack of better terms, it's going to threaten his hold on power in Moscow, and it's obviously going to basically threaten his attempt to aid his drive to restore Russia as a global power, because if Russia cannot quickly take over the Ukraine, you know, a country of 40 million people, if Russia can't, I mean, they've got literally thousands to millions of volunteers for the newly volunteer Ukrainian army. I mean, talk about a Jack and the Beanstalk situation, Jimmy.
Yeah, and, you know, so Russia failed miserably. Chechen War in 2000 under Putin was the one to kind of create a condition to be able to move forces in there. And then they lined up artillery toe-to-toe for like three echelons deep and just leveled Grozny and then just killed everybody they could possibly do.
Yeah.
They can't do that in Ukraine. They will not be able to operate that way. And the problem here, the serious problem for Putin, I agree with the Wall Street Journal article and the opinion that something, you know, he's going to suffer severely domestically, internationally, financially, and, you know, humiliating defeat if he backed out. The problem is what made him gave him the thought that he would succeed with this effort, and is he thinking rationally? Because he may not be. He may be like Hitler at the end of the war, making bad decisions.
Yeah. Well, that's the first thing that Mike said today when I drove him into Bellingham. You know, Mike Myers, Annapolis graduate, et cetera, et cetera. Apparently, there is quite a bit of talk out right now that Putin is actually in the same situation psychologically that Hitler was in, and that he is making irrational decisions. I got to tell you, I am amazed that this situation is turning out this way. As listeners are going to be aware, I was totally assured on Saturday and on Friday that Russia was just going to run over the Ukraine, but they're not doing that, not even close. Now Putin, and I said, you know, Putin, there was no way that we could do anything to stop him. Well, look, the countries in the area have stopped the guy. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that many European countries are supplying weapons. They're supplying aircraft, et cetera, et cetera. This thing could escalate into something very, very, very serious. And I have to admit, I make mistakes occasionally, and I'll admit that I made a mistake on this one. When I said that I thought that Putin had all the cards stacked in his corner, Jimmy, I really believed that. I totally undermined the rest of the support that the world is giving directly to the Ukraine. And I think at this moment in time, I'm not sure how Putin's going to get out of this and save face.
I don't think he can, other than weakness on not holding him accountable by the Biden administration or the EU once he backs off.
Right.
That's where it would be. Now, I will say, I listened to Sean Hannity on Friday afternoon on the radio. Just after we had done our show,
right?
You know, you and I had a little bit of difference of opinion. I thought this could be very difficult and problematic for him, and he might even, there's a possibility he could lose it.
Sure.
I listened to a lot of people believed exactly the same way that you thought, because they look at the world the way the United States operates and what we do with our military. We are very different than the rest of the world, and the Ukraine or Ukrainians are very different than the Afghan National Army. They're very different than some of these other places.
Yeah,
they've got a national identity here that they want to protect, and they know they've been wanting to move closer to the West. That's why Russia acted. That's why Putin acted. And there now, what I could see happening is that you get Ukraine in NATO very rapidly because of the fear of another attempt to come across. I see the possibility of Finland and Sweden saying, I'm not going to let Russia intimidate me.
Right.
I see Putin having a very difficult time financially and then domestically facing more and more problems as the sanctions take hold. But I will tell you straight up, the only reason why the Europeans and the United States are providing this support is because of the President Zelensky and his courage in leadership and to mobilize his nation and not run and flee. Had he run and fled, this entire thing would have been different. And you know what? The Biden administration offered that opportunity. That is embarrassing, in my view. This guy is standing up for his nation. He's doing what everyone should do in a situation like that, actually taking leadership at very high risk. That's what we don't see in the world. We don't see any of that with our regime right now in charge.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. You guys out there, every single one of you, I am going to, today's my day of rest, but I'm going to sit here, follow the wire services as they come into my computer. And if anything major happens between now and, I would have to say mid-evening, Jimmy and I will be back with you. Is that okay, Jim?
If I'm not in the mountains of Montana and Idaho, I'm getting close. I might
there
not get
you go. There you go. At least I'll come back to you guys, but we're going to hope that Jimmy can meet us. Jim, thanks so much, bud.
You bet.
And continue to drive very carefully.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics. We will be back in a moment.